From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of June 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Harry Cooney of Growmark will join us to take up the energy markets. Dave Dickey will be here to look at the agricultural news. Don Day will do the same, except with the agricultural weather forecast. And we'll hear from Mike Gray. He thinks it's possible the rootworm might adapt again. We'll have the details. And then in the second half hour of our program, we'll talk with Colleen Callahan, Illinois State Director for USDA Rural Development. It's called The Farming World, and you can hear it there and on many of these stations or online at willag.org. Hey, it is the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report and a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this Tuesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished like this. Nearby July wheat at 450 and three quarters, down 7 cents. September at $4.68 and a quarter, seven lower. And December wheat at 498 and three quarters, down 6 3/4 for the soft red. July harvest month hard red in Kansas City at $4.78. down 3 1/2 cents. Back in Chicago in the corn pit, $3.54, the settlement price for the nearby July, 5 cents lower. September at $3.64, down 5. December at $3.75 1/4, down 4 3/4. And March corn, $3.88 1/4, down 4 1/2. Next year's May at $3.97, down 4 1/4. July soybean futures, $9.32, down 5 3/4 cents. August at $9.20 3/4, down 7. September soybeans, $9.08 1/2, down 6 1/4. And November beans, the harvest, down 5 cents at $9.02 3/4. January soybeans at $9.12 1/2, down 4 3/4. And July bean meal, $2.69.40, $4.10 lower for the day. July soybean oil at $37.52, down 9 cents. June live cattle futures from the CME, $90.80, up 27 1/2 cents. August at $89.62 1/2, up 37 1/2. August feeders at $109.47 1/2, $1.05 higher. September up 40 cents at a $108.90. And June lean hog futures today at $81.40, down 45 cents on this Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from Urbana-Champaign. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, July contract, $72.66 a barrel, down $1.31. June ethanol at $1.60 2/10, just about 0.2 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.25 6/10, that is, down 8 1/2 cents. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.97 1/10. down 3 2/10 cents. Gold futures at $1,224.80, up $12.60, and the Dow now at 10,158, just about 22 points higher. The Goldman Sachs at 481.27 is down 6.2 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It says periodic showers and thunderstorms are likely through next week. All areas throughout the Midwest should get rain at one time or another, including the drier northwestern Corn Belt. Temperatures in the Midwest will be seasonable this week, with highs in the 70s and the 80s and lows in the 50s and the 60s. No dominating high-pressure ridge is advertised in key U.S. Midwestern locations over the next 10 days. The pattern, of course, should support great summer crop development potential, but leave some wheat fields a little wetter than desired. We'll have a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour, and we talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to check in on what's been happening in the world of agricultural futures. On the phone line with us this afternoon, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hi, Wayne. How are you today?
Well, just fine, Todd. Glad to be here.
How did the markets open up and trade after the long Memorial Day weekend?
Well, you know, we opened a little stronger than how the overnight had traded this morning. A little bit of new fund money coming in, and also the difference between when the market closed this morning from the overnight and when we reopened again, we saw crude oil turn around and be, steadied a little bit higher come the opening. We saw the dollar be a little lower, and we saw the Dow Jones make a recovery along the same respect, and we had just a little flurry for a little while. Sold off a little bit, and then hung in there real well until the last 10 or 15 minutes of the day. And between the weather forecast and just some more anxiety and not the fund money popping through at the end of the day like some people figured, why we closed about down where we closed the overnight. So it was sort of a two-sided trade through the day. But all in all, we ended up a little weak on the good weather.
It seems to me that most traders have been waiting, wanting, looking for a weather problem to develop this season more than they have in previous seasons. I'm surprised, I guess, a bit by that. It's always about the rumor. But they're awfully anxious this year. Why do you think that might be the case?
Well, I think that they know that it's going to take some sort of weather problem to really chip into the big carryouts that we're going to try to be building if we do have the crop that we potentially have for this year. You know, there was talk this morning there's a ridge in the far west that moves into the plains during the June 9th to 11th time period and then on to the Midwest in the June 12th to 14th, but we see it weakening. And the amount of rain being spread across the Midwest now that we've got the majority of the crop in the ground is, it's quite often, and we're not really seeing any major problem. I think the major problem in the world is probably the dryness in parts of China.
And what do you hear about it?
Well, like I say, we are a little bit concerned that there could be some problems there. There's talk that they could actually, be down 5 to 10% of what their early guesstimates were that way. You know, east central China will continue to see net drying with warm and hot temperatures. So that could be the difference of whether they pop back into our corn market and make some purchases that would help reduce our carryover.
Farmers in the local Crawfordsville, Indiana area finish up beans?
Yeah, we're pretty well wrapped up around here. We saw the majority of the guys finishing up Fridays and then the Saturday morning along the way. But, all in all, the beans are basically in the ground over here.
We are on the first day of June. Do you think we'll see satisfactory numbers from USDA's crop production reports this afternoon and progress reports?
Oh, I think, everybody's looking for the crops, the ratings to be improved. We're going to be really moving on up as far as the corn is basically done is basically what they're going to tell us, except probably for the Dakotas. You know, that's an area where we could see actually some pre-plant insurance claims being taken up in both the Dakotas and the area there where they stayed wet and didn't get their planting done.
What's your primary set of advice for producers calling in and wondering about their new crop sales?
Oh, well, I think, we're very happy with our sales up around $4 and above that way. We're going to give this more than one day of this week before we just throw in the towel here for this week, because we are right down on pretty much what has been support the last couple weeks, and we're going to see if we can't maybe get a little pop and a little change in the weather forecast before we add our hedges, Todd.
Any interesting things happening in the outside markets we need to make sure to keep track of?
Oh, I think, we mentioned them. We've kept a very close eye on crude oil. It seems to be, it took a little hit in the overnight because there was sort of evidence the Chinese economy would be slowing down with one report they out yesterday. And, of course, the worry about Spain being reduced as their credit rating. That is going to play very heavily, and it is ethanol so connected to the corn market and to the crude oil market that way. But we want to keep an eye on the Dow and make sure that our economic recovery is still continuing along the way. And we're holding above that 10,000 mark, and I think that's a real bellwether as to sort of pay attention to.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, here at willag.org, we're all about service to producers and farmers and agriculturalists across the globe. We try to make it as easy as possible for you to get to our information. One way is the website, of course, at willag.org. One way is the radio stations you can hear these programs on. And one other is what we call our mobile analyst portal. It's just a telephone line with a bit of voicemail. We update at 10:15 and 3:15 daily with either the opening or the closing numbers and some analysis. The phone number to call on that one, 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434. Now here's Dave.
In agricultural news, under a federal court settlement, livestock producers could have to provide detailed information about their operations to the Environmental Protection Agency, which then could be released to the public. The federal court settlement involving rules for concentrated animal feeding operations states that EPA has 1 year to propose a new rule that would require all CAFOs to provide information to the EPA on their facilities and waste management, quote, regardless of whether they discharge or propose to discharge. Livestock producers would have to report the number of head on the operation, type of manure storage and capacity, amount of manure or litter generated every year, information land application, details of any movement of manure off-site, and acreage and nutrition management practices. EPA is expected to issue a guidance explaining how the agency will move ahead on its proposed rule, but that has not yet been released. Industry participants today say that a dispute between China and Argentina over soy oil imports is unlikely to be resolved soon, even though a delegation from the South American country is in China discussing the issue. The delegation arrived in China on Saturday to negotiate over trade disputes between the two countries, including China's recent restrictions on soy oil imports from Argentina. The delegation has met with officials at China's General Administration of Quality Supervision, Inspection, and Quarantine, and is today meeting with two vice ministers of commerce. Caterpillar today agreed to buy a U.S. maker of railroad locomotives for $820 million in cash, expanding its rail business from service into new engine manufacturing. The world's largest maker of heavy equipment said it was buying electromotive diesel, which last year generated $1.8 billion in revenue. The new business will be a part of Caterpillar's Progress Rail operation, which will now compete more directly with General Electric Company, another major U.S. maker of locomotives. The deal is expected to close by the end of the year. Oil World Today says the global soybean crop in the upcoming 2010-2011 season is likely to fall 5.1% on the year to 253.8 million tons, but surging stocks will keep supplies ample. Unsold soybean stocks at the end of the current 2009-10 season are expected to rise to 70.3 million tons, from only 45.8 million tons at the end of 2008-2009. In its first U.S. projection of the season, Oil World says the 2010-11 soybean crop is likely to fall marginally on the year to 91.0 million tons from 91.42 million tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now, coming up next, the fireflies are out and Memorial Day has passed. I'll have reports on what it might mean for farmers in scouting their fields for rootworms.
Support comes from the Westchester Group in Champaign, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of agricultural investments for institutional, corporate, and individual clients. Information at 800-607-6888 or at westchester-group.com.
It's about this time each year that the annual rootworm hatch takes place. Mike Gray is an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois and has spent many a season digging up and looking for evidence of the devastating little creature on the roots of corn.
Right now across central Illinois, as we enter midway through this last week of May, hatch is undoubtedly underway across central Illinois. But one of the things that we've noticed and are going to continue to watch pretty carefully over the next several years is that hatch moving further and further into the summer. In other words, is it moving beyond Memorial Day? Are we starting to see more of that hatch occur in early June? Because we know that as we increase the level of transgenic hybrids that are out there, we may have caused some selection pressure to be exerted on the rootworm population, favoring a late hatch.
The rootworm is an adaptive little insect. It took about 25 years for its population to favor laying eggs in soybeans instead of corn. Now, farmers knew that a good way to control the rootworm was to rotate crops from one year to the next. When the rootworm, which is a beetle in the adult stage, only lived its life in corn, it was easy to control. But the insect adapted and started living its life in corn and beans. Well, the transgenic crops were designed in part to kill the rootworm. But as this tale begins to reveal, the way the crop kills the rootworm fades with time. Here's Mike Gray.
Because we know that many transgenic hybrids, as they mature throughout the growing season, begin to express lower amounts of those cry proteins in root tissue. So is there some advantage if you're a corn rootworm and you hatch later in the spring and early summer than your cohorts? We think there might be. So that's something we're going to kind of watch over the next several years and see if a pattern begins to emerge.
That is to say, there is not an identifiable pattern at this point, but that it's worth watching to see if the Central Illinois Memorial Day rootworm hatch moves deeper into the calendar. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You can keep track of that rootworm hatch if you'd like and what Mike Gray has to say anytime you want on the IPM Bulletin website. The address for that one is www.ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. It's a look at what's been happening in the world of crop production from the view of the specialist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The address again is www.ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. Time on this Monday, or rather Tuesday afternoon, to check what's been happening in the world of the agricultural energy markets. Harry Cooney is with us from his office at Growmark in Bloomington. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
How are you today?
Well, I'm doing fine. We had quite an active session here today. We came in after the three-day holiday weekend, and the market was sharply lower. In fact, overnight, crude oil was down over $2 a barrel. And then when the day session opened around 8 o'clock, the buyers came into the market, and by about 10:30 or 11 o'clock, we had ran it up probably a dollar a barrel or more to the upside, and then that quickly faded. And then it sold off into the noon hour, tried a little rally attempt, and then faded again at the close. So we ended down over a dollar in crude oil, and down about 4 cents lower in gasoline and diesel fuel here at the close. So it was quite a roller coaster.
Any common reason for the roller coaster ride?
Well, the equity markets overnight, the stock market was real weak. Dow futures last night during the night was down about 200 points. The dollar was sharply higher overnight. And so today when we came in, some of those sellers in the stock market had kind of left. And so the Dow opened maybe 100 lower or so. And it came back higher on the day also. Right now I'm looking on our live board here, and it's down about 30 points here right now. So, again, it's kind of had a roller coaster ride also. The Dow and the dollar, as we've talked about before on the show, have really had quite an impact on the energy markets. Of course, they peaked out there right around the first day of May. In fact, gasoline prices at the pumps have weakened quite a bit throughout the month of May, firmed up a little bit there just before the Memorial Day holiday, but overall have gave the consumers and the driving public a little relief there at the pumps just around the holiday. Of course, today is the 1st of June now, and so we all know this is the first day of the hurricane season. So watching that closely down in the Gulf, the waters are warm enough this year that they claim it could be a very active hurricane season and one of the most active since 2005. We'll see if that holds true or not. Of course, with the oil spill going on down in the Gulf, there's concern that if a hurricane would come through there, it could spread that oil all around and make more of a mess than a normal hurricane even would. So we have that to deal with a little bit down there also this year.
Yeah, I had made note that there's not been a lot of talk about the oil spill and BP's problems with that having a great deal of impact on the marketplace until this past week, when there's been some thought that this might not stop for a while, the spill, that is, even for much longer than it already is gone. Has BP suffered in the marketplace as well, or have they been sharply lower at points?
Well, their stock has been. I mean, when the spill started, I think BP's stock was up around 60 or 65, and today it's down about, right there now it's down about 14%, it looks like, down almost $6. And so it's had quite a sell-off in the stock also, yes, definitely.
Does that reflect anything back into the crude oil market by chance?
Well, the crude oil doesn't seem like it. It just doesn't seem like it's had the impact on the price. It seems like it's more of a more of an environmental issue down there, and obviously each time they not a positive result to some of these items that they're testing, it seems like the stock then keeps selling off on that lack of ability to be able to get it capped. But as far as over into the markets, it seems like the markets are having more of an impact with the based on the dollar and the stock market here than anything else. We're looking at a point here now to when it gets washed out, the price gets washed out, we're looking at to find a place to enter the fall diesel fuel market. We'll be putting out some recommendations to our FS member cooperatives here over the next several weeks, possibly, to start contracting some fuel for fall. This tends to be, according to some historical patterns, it tends to be a good time to start doing some buying. There was a pattern that was more than 3 or 4 years ago. The pattern was that you'd rally up into about May, you'd sell off into about the 4th of July, and then you'd rally again in price on up into the fall time period. Now, that pattern has changed a little bit over the past 3 years, when the seasonal will just continue to take price up into midsummer and then fall. So we're looking for opportunities now to come up with some areas to start buying for fall diesel.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney with GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois. More in 2 minutes on the agricultural weather forecast.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming Dave Dickey. In business news, the Commerce Department today says that U.S. construction spending rose unexpectedly in April, recording its largest monthly increase in nearly a decade. Construction spending rose 2.7%, the biggest advance since August of 2000, to an annual rate of $869.1 billion. The Institute for Supply Management today says that the U.S. manufacturing sector expanded in May for a 10th straight month, but at a slower pace than in April, while employment rose slightly to its best level in 6 years. The ISM says its index of national factory activity slipped to 59.7 in May from 60.4 in April. A reading above 50 indicates expansion in the sector. The report's employment component rose to 59.8, the highest since May of 2004. Canada today became the first of the G7 major industrialized countries to begin hiking interest rates following the global financial crisis, raising its key rate by a quarter point to 0.5%. The Bank of Canada had kept its interest rates at an emergency low of 0.25% since April of 2009. And MasterCard says it spent $820,000 in the first quarter to lobby the federal government on Wall Street reform and consumer protection legislation. And that's a look at today's business news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Some beautiful rainfall here yesterday on Memorial Day. Don, will there be more in the future?
Well, it certainly is looking like it. In fact, we've got a series of small weather systems that'll be going west to east across the nation's midsection, and these will set off some showers and thunderstorms today. It'll be Iowa, southern Minnesota, eastern Nebraska that gets a good chance of showers and thunderstorms. Rainfall there could be half inch, inch and a half in some areas. And we see other systems like this coming through about every other day or two across the Midwest, most of the Corn Belt area. So the frequency of rain looks to be good, and the amounts of rain look to be near, if not a little bit above normal in many areas.
And so, and how long do you think that'll have an impact across the Midwest?
I think we've got a good week where this pattern, at least three more systems coming on through, maybe 10 days. This could go into early next week. Temperatures are going to be warm. I'd call them very close to where they should be this time of year, close to normal. Not as warm as what we saw over the last couple of weeks. Trending cooler, but nothing that would tip the scales too much colder than normal.
Can you crystal ball the middle part of June, what it might look like?
Well, I think as we get to the middle part of June, we're seeing some signs that we'll start to build a little bit of summer heat in. So once we get through this next 7 to 10 days, I would expect pretty typical mid-June weather. There's nothing right now showing up as extraordinary, either terribly hot, terribly dry, or terribly wet. Just if we were to look at what we were expect for the middle of June, I would look at what our climatological normals are for that time of year.
Better than abnormal, I suppose. What's the rest of the globe look like?
Well, really starting to show signs ever so slowly of getting into an early summer pattern. Over in China, they're looking at a fairly active weather pattern. Rain chances are going to be good in most of the growing areas over there over the next week to 10 days. Over in Europe, it's been a little bit drier and warmer, but most of Europe, including Russia, the Ukraine, looking at near average to above average precipitation, especially central and eastern Europe. Western Europe will be a little drier.
Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. You can always listen to him again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll say goodbye to some of you now. For the rest of you, stay with us for the Farming World. Our guest today, Colleen Callahan. She's the Illinois State Director for USDA Rural Development. If you can't hear her on the radio, you can hear her at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, our topic, rural development. We'll talk with Illinois State Director for USDA Rural Development, Colleen Callahan. Ms. Callahan, it is a pleasure to have you on the show in this capacity. Thank you so much for being here.
You are very welcome. Well, if it is a pleasure for you, it is an honor for me in this capacity as Director of USDA Rural Development for Illinois. I welcome every opportunity to share what USDA Rural Development really does and how it works. So I thank you for that that chance.
Much of our audience will be familiar with you as a radio personality and a farm broadcaster, just so that they know you're one and the same, and now you're in rural development at
Correct.
USDA. Let's talk about some of the things that you've been up to since you've taken on the job. I made note off of the website that you were recently learning how to drive a great big truck.
That's right, I was. First of all, one of the reasons that I had the opportunity to learn how to drive that great big rig that you're referring to is that USDA Rural Development is a lender. We have loans and grants, both direct loans and guaranteed loans and grants, in three basic program areas of housing, community facilities, as well as business programs. And under each one of those headings, there are a total of over 40 different programs. And the reference that you made about learning to drive the big rig was at Lakeland Community College, where we were able to work with them with our funding to help them secure the software that's needed and the program that's needed to help students learn how to drive one of those big rigs. And so you're driving it virtually, but of course it seems like you're right in the seat.
Are these grants or are they loans, combination thereof?
This was a combination, and oftentimes it is just that. It typically is a combination of grant and loan. And there's never as much grant money as there is loan money, but it is usually a combination of the two.
How much money did you loan out last year, do you know?
We average throughout rural Illinois $1.8 million every day. Every day we are able to assist with projects and programs that benefit our rural community throughout Illinois on an average of $1.8 million every day. And we're pretty efficient at doing it because it's 1.5 cents administrative cost per dollar delivered.
And those are loans. What kind of payback do you have on them?
It depends on the program, Todd. In housing, it depends on if it's a guaranteed loan, if it's a direct loan. And let's say in the water program, as an example, which we were talking about, the water programs are for communities that are 10,000 and under in population. The housing and the community facilities programs are for communities that are 20,000 and under, and our business programs are for communities that are 50,000 and under in population. Now, that wasn't your question, but it needs to be established that that's the baseline that is used. And then when it comes to the grants, once you've determined that a community qualifies, then for grant purposes, you have to begin to do the work on the average household income. And the higher the average household income is in a community, the less grant money is available. And so it would follow that the lower the average household income, the more grant money is available. So there's a bit of a formula to it that you have to work through that would determine how much grant versus how much low-interest loan money would be available. And then when you say, well, what would be the interest rate on that, there's another variable. If you are one of our three counties in Illinois that is classified as a perennial poverty county, then the interest rate is going to be the absolute lowest at 1%. In other areas, it may be 2 or 3%, or it may be 4%. But they are all very low-interest loans, lower than what you would find at a traditional lending institution. And in the water program, again, as an example, these loans are spread out over 40 years. And so when you're talking a low-interest loan over 40 years, it makes it possible for these communities to pay that money back because they have a longer period of time to do it, and they have less cash outlay over time to do so.
Can you tell me just a bit more about the breadth of rural development and the kinds of loans? Because you're putting out $1.8 million a day, there are three primary areas. We've touched on two of them at this point, but maybe if you could give us an idea of what kinds of things you see that come through the office and that you help to fund, whether that's through a grant or a loan, because it must be extraordinarily wide-ranging.
Well, it certainly is. And when you consider the needs that communities have, let's just start there. With rural development funding through the loans and grants, whether it's direct or guaranteed, or whether it's a combination of a loan and a grant along with it, let's take a community that needs infrastructure improvement. And let's take Rossville as an example, where we were able, through our business program area, through what's called an RBOG, it's a Rural Business Enterprise Grant. That's a $99,000 grant in that instance that Rossville applied for, was reviewed, they received it, and they're utilizing that money to improve their sidewalks, their streets. They can use that money to improve the facades of their main street on those buildings. We have another program where a revolving loan fund can be established through a grant program. And the community can apply for that. And then that money is theirs to utilize as they recognize is needed in their community. So when a business may come to them and they need some startup money, then that community can offer that money to that entity for that purpose. And the community can say, well, we'd like 2% interest on this loan. What that does then is perpetuate that fund so that the community can then help other businesses that may come to them that has a need. We assist with hospitals, brand new hospitals, hospital extensions or expansions, telemedicine, libraries, community facilities if there is a need for that very entity, a community facility, a community building. If there are fire sirens that are needed or storm sirens that are needed or fire trucks or police cars, all of those come under our community programs area. When you talk about housing, we have programs that span from individuals who may need assistance with buying a home. And if they are in a income category that qualifies for, say, a 1% direct loan or maybe a no down payment loan, we're able to assist in that manner. Or we can guarantee a loan that has been made at a lending institution of their choice, which means that it gives them an opportunity to do something that they otherwise might not have been able to do. If you travel through a community, say, in Milford, Illinois, and you see a apartment complex there, it may be that USDA Rural Development 30 years ago helped fund that multifamily housing project, and we're still in the process of helping that community maintain that project, along with the owner who came to us for funding to build it. And some of those, of course, include some subsidies for some of our retirees or needs because of whatever misfortune someone may have had and has limited income. They still need a place to live, and so USDA Rural Development can assist in that kind of a project as well. In the business programs, just a few days ago when Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack was in Illinois, he spent a great deal of time in Morton at RMH Foods, which years ago was Rokey's Meeting House, and it was just a little local locker. And then another generation came in, and they decided to do some value-added work, and then another generation came in, and they said, gee, maybe we could work on some meat products that were fully cooked and didn't take too much time then to prepare for a full meal. Well, that was very successful, and Smithfield Foods recognized it, and they came in and purchased RMH Foods in Morton. And then about a year or so ago, Smithfield announced that they were going to spin off some of these acquisitions. And the Rokey family went to their local lender and said that they'd like to buy this company back. They'd like to be able to keep it in the community, retain the 133 jobs that go along with it. And so then that local lender came to Rural Development and said, would you guarantee this loan? And through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus package, we were able to, yes, guarantee that loan. We were able to guarantee it at 90%. And when the secretary was in Morton to tour the facility and meet the family and the people that they put together to come together to provide also some funding on their own to keep it together, it spanned a whole nother conversation about how we look at our food system as it relates to the school lunch program. And so when the secretary asked John Rokey if they had products that could possibly be used in school programs that were lower in fat and lower in salt, and he said yes, that was the next wave of what they were working on, they now have built a relationship and may possibly at least come to the table for discussion about how a company like that may be able to help in that manner. So for the short time that I've been involved with USDA Rural Development since July 13th of last year, I have come to realize that what Rural Development does is help people. There isn't a day goes by that we don't help someone in some way, and that's the true essence of public service. So I hope those are a few examples that maybe give it a little more flavoring rather than just dollars and cents and qualifications about the kinds of differences that Rural Development can help make in our rural communities.
What we're really talking about, I suppose, is to some extent a transfer of wealth in some form or another, whether it's through the grants. Sometimes loans, of course, are paid back, but they're low-interest loans. So it's a transfer of wealth from one set of taxpayers to the others. Is there a U.S. government counterpart to Rural Development for the urban areas?
What I like to say about USDA Rural Development is that we are a lot like the SBA, the Small Business Administration. And I have said this in the presence of SBA personnel. When I say we are like the SBA, the Small Business Administration, only we're better because we focus exclusively on rural communities. And we are a lot like the FHA, the Federal Housing Authority, except we're better because we focus exclusively on rural communities. So, yes, there are counterparts, and those would be two that first come to my mind.
You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. More on our conversation with Illinois State Director of the Rural Development Program for USDA, Colleen Callahan, in a moment.
It's Early Bird Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1866, Charles Davenport was born. An American zoologist, he contributed substantially to the science of heredity, and he was a pioneer in the use of statistical techniques in biological research. Also in 1866, American inventor W.H. Richardson was issued a patent for a cotton chopper. In 1875, A.P. Ashbourne received a patent for a process preparing coconut for domestic use. The process involved grating coconut, passing it through a sieve with hot water, and cooking it with hot steam for several hours before pressing it dry. Sugar and cinnamon are then added before packaging. In 1908, John Cron walked over 9,000 miles around the perimeter of the United States with his wheelbarrow. He completed the walk in 357 days, resting only on Sundays. In 1926, the first automatic pop-up toaster was introduced by the Walters Genter Company of Minneapolis, Minnesota. In 1951, the International Cheese Treaty was signed. Its key feature was usage and designation of origin and names for cheeses. And in 1976, Great Britain and Iceland settled their codfish war. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest is the State Director for USDA Rural Development in Illinois, Colleen Callahan. Ms. Callahan, are funds from Congress hard to come by for rural development programs?
Well, I'm so new that I haven't experienced that phase of the process yet, but certainly am about to with discussions of the 2011 budget and the conversation that began just very recently on the 2012 Farm Bill. So I can't really speak to that from any previous reference. However, I can tell you that the Secretary of Agriculture rarely misses an opportunity wherever he is speaking and to whatever group it may be to underscore the need for us to think about the future of our rural communities as it relates to production agriculture. Because, Todd, you know very well from all of the interviews that you have done over the years about how rapidly our technology has taken us to a very consistent increase in productivity. And so we are able to feed the world, if you will. One farmer feeds hundreds of people, not just a few people. And I'm not here to debate where that raw product should go, whether it should go to food or fuel. That's not where I want to focus. What I want to focus on, that no matter where that raw product goes, that at least in the Midwest, we have become so efficient and so specialized that we plant in the spring to wait in the summer to harvest in the fall, to wait in the winter to plant in the spring to wait in the summer to harvest in the fall, because we can. And what that also means is that a very high percentage of our production agriculturalists have off-farm jobs. And if there are no off-farm jobs in those rural communities, that jeopardizes potentially that level of productivity. And so that means that it is the rural development arm of USDA that has the responsibility to assist our rural communities to make sure that we have done our part for jobs to be available for production agriculture as off-farm opportunities. But it can't stop there. That's the basis. That's the foundation. If we just do that, it could become a zero-sum game if we don't do the next leg of it, and that's assist in bringing in broadband to those communities to attract young people to either stay or return to those communities for its lifeblood. So when you say Does Congress debate the allocation of funding for rural development? Yes, they do. And it will become all part of the discussion on the allocation of funding for USDA in general. USDA Rural Development is one of the entities within USDA, along with FSA and risk management and, of course, food and nutrition. And again, as you well know, the highest percentage of expenditures and allocation in USDA is for food and nutrition. USDA Rural Development is really a very small portion of the allocation in USDA. So we're going to have to see where literally the chips fall as it relates to rural development funding going forward. But I do know, as I started out saying, that this Secretary of Agriculture is always very quick to talk about the significance of rural development and the role that it plays in the future of agriculture, that I'm confident that he will continue to send that message wherever he is. And that's not to take away from production agriculture, but to help create the foundation for it to be maintained and to thrive.
We would be amiss if we did not discuss how it is that people apply for the grants and the loans. Where do they go?
We have 12 offices throughout Illinois. There are 13 total. The state office is located in Champaign, not far from the Country Fair Shopping Center. There are two USDA buildings there, and Rural Development is sharing that location with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. There is also one of our area offices located in Champaign. And then we have in that area Effingham as well as Pontiac. And then you get further north, and we have Princeton and Oregon and Ottawa. Then you come around the horn a little bit, and then we're talking Galesburg and Jacksonville and Quincy. And then in the more southern part of the state, we have Edwardsville and Mount Vernon as well as Marion. So there are 125 employees throughout Illinois that are devoted to administering the rural development programs as they relate to lending and the needs that exist throughout rural Illinois. You can go to the USDA website, and you can just go to USDA Rural Development. That'll get you there. You can put USDA Rural Development, Illinois, that will get you there very specifically, but it's www.rurdev.usda.gov and then a / and IL. But again, Google it, USDA Rural Development, and it'll pop up.
Colleen Callahan is Illinois State Director for USDA Rural Development. You've been listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good day.